We'll start from Omer Rav Sheshes. We're on Kuf Hei Omer Beis. And if you're counting up from the bottom of the Omer, it's approximately, I would say, 12 lines up, 15 lines up. What would you say? Yeah. Omer Rav Sheshes. HaKofer B'Pikadon Nase Olav Gazlan V'Chayev Ba'onsim. You may remember that we began this sugya last week. And we assume that according to Rav Sheshes, even though normally a gazlan is someone who actually goes into someone's rishus and takes it, that's called a maisig zela. Here he didn't do so because he's got a pikadon, somebody deposited an object in his hands. But nevertheless, the kfir itself, which means, as we discussed last time, when the plaintiff, when the mafkid puts forward his claim to the shomer and says, return my object, that itself is, when he denies that claim and he says, I never took anything from you, that itself constitutes a gzela. And the chiddush here is that even though when Adam come and testify that in fact he has the pikadon, he's holding on to it, so in any event he's going to have to return it, but the chiddush is if that pikadon gets lost through no fault of his own, without any negligence, that's called onus, mitigating circumstances, he's going to have to pay for that. And why is he going to have to pay for that? Because a gazlan is chayav for onsim, as opposed to a shomer. Even if he's a shomer sochen, he's being paid for it. He's potter from onsim, and even if he's a shoel, he's potter in the case of meisim achmas malacha, whatever it is. For any shomer of the four categories of shomer, there's always a patur. In the case of a gazlan, there is no patur. He simply has to return either the object itself or, alternatively, its value. And at what point does it become a gazlan, says Rav Sheshes? At the moment that he denies the claim. That's called a kfira. And we pointed out last time that has to be a kfira in Bezdin. You know, what happens outside of Bezdin is irrelevant. He can deny the claim outside of Bezdin and come into Bezdin and admit. But here in Bezdin itself, he denied the claim. I don't have your pikadon. I never had your pikadon. And there's nothing to talk about. Has he taken a shvua or has he not taken a shvua?
No, but how did he get into his possession in the first place?
Well, he's claiming, before the Adam came in to falsify his claim, that he doesn't have the cow. He never got the cow and it's not here. That's what he's claiming. And then the Adam come in and testify, well, you are holding on to his cow. So because he denied that he ever got the cow, he becomes a gazlan on the cow. And even if lightning strikes the cow, he's going to have to pay its value to the mafkid, to the nigzal. And again, the emphasis here is, and that's the big chiddush of Rav Sheshes, this is a big splash of news on the front cover of the paper, is that even though he didn't take a shvua, he still becomes a gazlan. The Gemara now is going to attack Rav Sheshes and try to prove no, that the only time that we impose all these chiyuvim of gzela on the shomer, is after A plus B, A meaning the kfira, but B the shvua. And if that kfira was not substantiated by a shvua, then he's not a gazlan, and he's not chayav for onsim. That's what the Gemara is going to try to disprove of Sheshes. But first, we'll call it Roman numeral number one in the sugya, is the Gemara tries to actually prove Rav Sheshes before it goes the other direction and try to disprove Rav Sheshes. And when the Gemara wants to quote a brisa to support and substantiate an opinion, that's called Vitana Tuna. And what does it say in this brisa? The brisa is analyzing a pasuk in Vayikra He. That's the parsha that we learned about the chiyuv of Chomesh and Asham, which clearly is conditioned on the fact that he took a shvua. But in that parsha, the Gemara says, there's also another part of the parsha. In addition to the shvua part of the parsha, there's also a part of the parsha which is Vekichesh Ba, which means the kfira, without the shvua. I'll read to you the whole pasuk. It says, O matza aveda v'kichesh ba, and then it says v'nishba al sheker. And what the Gemara is going to do is the Gemara is now going to split this pasuk into two parts. There's the v'kichesh ba part, which is kfira alone, pure kfira without shvua, and then the second part is v'nishba al sheker, which is the shvua. And the Gemara says that in the next pasuk it says that he has to return veheshiv es hagzela asher gazal. And the question is, how do you interpret veheshiv es hagzela asher gazal? Is it referring to the last part of the pasuk, meaning the shvua sheker v'nishbal sheker, or to the first part of the pasuk, which is v'kichesh ba, which means kfira without sheker? I'm sorry, without shvua. And the Brisa says the following: Lo madnu onesh. The Torah tells us v'heishiv sakzela asher gazal, which means the penalty is that he's going to have to pay for this gzela again, even if the gzela is lost. Ba'ones, and that we derive from the pasuk veheishiv es hagzela. That's called onesh in the lashon of the Brisa. It's a very odd kind of use of the word onesh, because it's not really a punishment, it's more of a chiyuv mamon. But the Gemara says we never find a chiyuv mamon to pay money and compensate someone for onesh, for something that's beyond my control, and therefore it overlaps on an onesh. But we have a principle that ain onshim elin kein mazirim, that every onesh has to have a warning in the Torah, so to speak. The Torah has to say, don't do it. And after the Torah says, don't do it, then the Torah spells out and formulates the punishment for violating that azhara. So azhara minayin, what pasuk is going to teach me that you're not allowed to do what you did, and as a result of what you did, and you violated what you're not allowed to do, your punishment is such and such. In this case, veheishiv es hagzela afilu bi'ones. Talmud Lomer, the pasuk is, and here the Gemara, the Brisa is fast forwarding to Parshas Kedoshim. We started with Parshas Vayikra, now we're all the way in Kedoshim Vayikra Yutes, and there it says v'lo sechashashu. V'lo sechashashu means not to be machrish or not to be kofar. And this would seem to support Rav Sheshes, that for violating lo sechachashu, which means for hakchasha is kfira, for denying that you the claim that you have his, that you received his cow, you have to be punished with veheishiv es hagzela asher gazal, meaning the azhara for veheishiv es hagzela is lo sechachashu, and the onesh is veheishiv es hagzela. Says Rav Sheshes, it's clear, it's explicit in this brisa, supporting my opinion that kfira alone, even without shvua, insofar as it's a violation of lo sechachashu, engenders the chiyuv onesh of veheishiv es hagzela asher gazal. My lav lionish mama. Now, the Gemara with the my lav is already anticipating a possible shlugger. You know, we might counter argue against this proof by saying, you know what, maybe the onesh that we're talking about here is not an onesh mamon. It's not that he has to pay and compensate the nigzal for the loss of the gzela, but maybe it's a reference to other punishments like chomesh or like asham, in which case we might be talking about shvua, because again the onesh of chomesh and asham is engendered by shvua sheker. So in other words, Rav Sheshes, you're telling me my lav onesh mamon, that the subject of this brisa is onesh mamon, which means veishiv es hagzela asher gazal as a penalty for violating lo sechachashu. Maybe that's not the subject or the intention of this brisa. Maybe the subject of this brisa is a different kind of a punishment, namely a real onesh. Lo, says the Gemara, I'm going to counter against Rav Sheshes. This is not a proof for Rav Sheshes, because the Brisa doesn't have in mind an onesh mamon, which is for kfira, but rather the onesh shvua, that if a person took an onesh shvua, then he is punished with all the punishments that are written in the parasha. Says Rav Sheshes, I already knew about your counter argument, and I took that into account. I already prepared myself with a counter to your counter argument, what we call a pre de pre, if you're familiar with it, which means I have already an answer to your argument. Hamidik Tani Seifa, in the very same brisa, it says Vishtaba, if he went ahead and he took a shvua, so it wasn't just a kfira, which was sheker, but now it was also shvua sheker, and then he gets all the punishments therein. Michlal, from the fact that in the Sefer the Braisa qualifies what happens if he took a Shvuah Sheker. The Reisha, we can certainly derive that the Reisha is a case of Loish Tama. It's not a Shvuah, it was only a Kfiris moment. He violated El Techashu, and his punishment is a punishment of Mamon, in which case he has to return the Gzela or pay its Damim. The Katani Sefer, and let's now read the Sefer. The Sefer says, V'nishpa al Sheker, that the Pasuk tells me that if not only the Kicheshba that we read before, but also the Nishba al Sheker, and then the next part of the Pasuk, which you don't see in your Gemara, it says, V'shileim oso barosh v'chamish oso Yosef oleves ha-shomo yavi la-shem, is lomadnu onesh. We see that the Torah imposes a double onesh on a person who took a Shvuah Sheker. Number one, he pays an additional penalty of chomish. Number two, he also has to bring a korban asham. And this price, by the way, would support something that we said, if you recall, about a week or two ago, that it could very well be that Chomesh belongs to the category of Onesh. It's sort of a kapara beino levein HaKadosh Baruch, even though it's paid to the Nigzal, which is a little paradoxical. That would sound like bein Odom lechavero. And we discussed the question of whether or not the Yarshim, if the guy who took the Shvuah Sheker then dies, whether his Yarshim have to pay Chomesh. Here I would advocate that yes, they would have to pay they would not have to pay Chomish, because Chomish belongs to the same category as the Onish of Asham, which means it's part of Kapara, and therefore there's no Chiv Kapara in the Yarshim. But anyway, that was that Sugya. Azhar Minayim, so the Braisa continues and says, okay, you want to punish him for the Shvuah Sheker with a slap on him, a Chiv Chomish plus a Chiv Asham, there's got to be an Azhara for that. Where is that Azhara? Talmud Lomar, Lo Seshakru, Ish, the end of the Pasuk is Ish Ba'amiso. A person should not lie to his fellow Jew. And if he does so in a court case, and he takes a Shvuah Sheker, then he's punished for violating Lo Seshakru. And he has to pay an additional Chomish plus bring a Karban Asham. Be the sefer the ishtaba, reisha the lo ishtaba. It means that the entire back and forth in the reisha of this price about we've a kicheshba, and therefore he gets punished the heishav hagzela shar gazal asar minayin. That's not discussing the issue of shvuah, but rather the discussion revolves around the issue of a kfira without shvuah and a chiyuv onish of mamon. For taking for offering a kfiras sheker and violating the law of lo sechachashu. Amri, the Gemara is still not happy with this brisa as a support text for Rav Sheshes. Why? Edi, I could really argue that both the Reisha and the Seifa, in the case of someone who is kofer bepikadon, dishtaba, are both addressing a case where he took a shvuah. No, if he took a shvuah in both cases, so why did the Braisa feel compelled to repeat the whole story? What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa if in both cases he took a shvuah sheker? The answer is, kan shahoda v'kan shebo eden. True. He doesn't become a gazlan with the chiv of Eishav Asakzela Shar Gazal Afil Bonesim unless he took a Shvuah Sheker. The reason why the Reisha is limited to a chiv Onesh Mamon of Hashav Asakzela and doesn't extend it to Chomesh and Asham is because in order to engender a chiv of Chomesh v'Asham, another condition has to be fulfilled. It's not enough that he was kofer. It's not enough that he took a Shvuah Sheker. The third condition, we discussed this in the past, has to be Hodah. He's got to confess his crime. So in the Reisha, he didn't confess his crime. We caught him on hot with Adam. And when the testimony came in, we established that he's going to be punished because of the lie of kfira plus shvuah. The punishment in this case will be limited and therefore will only apply to the chiyuv mamon. That's based on the fact that Edom support the claim of the plaintiff here that you are holding on to my object, and if the object is gone, then you'll have to pay its value. The Seifa, however, takes us a step further. Why? Because the third element that was lacking in the Reisha, namely Hodah, was fulfilled in the Seifa. In the Seifa, we have the whole gamut. We have A, Kfira, B, Shua, Sheker, and C, Hodah. And therefore, he has to be punished with not only pay the Keren, but he also has to add a Chomesh and bring a Karban Hashem. So the Seifa and the Reisha are both discussing a case where he took a Shvuas Sheker. Why is it that in the Reisha he only gets a Chiyuv Onesh Mamon and no Chiyuv Onesh of Chomesh and Hashem? Because in the Reisha they caught him lying when the witnesses came in and testified against the defendant, against the Gazlan in this case. He is a Gazlan. Why is he a Gazlan? Because A, he was kofer, and B, he took a shvuah sheker. That makes him into a Gazlan, and Vehesh was like Zeila Filu Bionis. However, the Chiyuv Asham is part of the process of tshuva, the Chiyuv Chomesh and Asham, which is dependent and initiated by his Hodah. In the Sefer, he had a Hodah. He came out on his own and he confessed his crime and he says, I want to do tshuva, give me the method of doing tshuva. The Torah says you have to give a chomesh and you have to bring a korban hashem in addition to the keren. In the Reisha, he wasn't asking for darkei tshuva. He was just simply caught lying by two edim because the Torah believes two edim against his claim. And the Torah says that when the edim say he took the cow, he had the cow, then he becomes, as a result of A, his kfira, and B, his shua sheker, he becomes a gazlan, and therefore veishim is like zela asher gazlan is the onish mamon, a penalty that applies even in onsim. But chomesh and oshmi doesn't pay because he's not coming forward in a process of tshuva. So again, at the end of the day, the vetana tuna does not succeed. Its goal is not achieved. Even though it would really seem like this price is divided into a Reisha and a Seifa, Kasher, the Reisha is talking about a case of Kfira without Shvua, the Seifa of Kfira with Shvua, and therefore the punishment of Eishav is like Gzela Sher Gazal applies with Kfira without Shvua in the Reisha. That was the way that Rav Sheshes understood the Reisha. But Lamaskana, no. Even the Reisha is talking about a case where he becomes a Gazlan because he fulfills two conditions, Kfira and Shvua Sheker. He is exonerated from the Chiyuvim of Chomesh and Asham only because there was no Hodah. And in the Sefer, where there was a Hodah, there he has to pay. Now there's a Tosis here, Dibri Amaschil, my love. And Tosis says, this sugya and the very premise therein seems to contradict what we know from many, many places in Shas, and that is that when we talk about ein onshim ela emkein mazhirim, that there's no such thing as a punishment unless there has a prior warning in the Torah, losas in the Torah, that only applies to karbonos, that only applies to malkios, that only applies to misa. All of those are included under onshim, and they require an azhara, a prior azhara. But there's something else that has nothing to do with onshim, and that's called a chiyuv mamon. I owe you money. And if I owe you money, I have to pay this money. Even if there's no azhara, I still have to pay you the money. I don't have to look for a violation of a law.
What's the onish?
I say that when the Gemara says that there's an onish moment of Vaheshim's like Zayla has to pay for the Gzela, Tosa says, why then is the Brisa searching high and low for an azhara? Yeah, until the Brisa can add Velo answer Velo Tzachashu. Forget about Velo Tzachashu. If I owe you money because I stole your object and I have to pay for it, that's called a Chiyuv Mamon. That's not an Onish. There's no universal principle of Ein Onshim Elin Kei Mazhirin with regard to an Onish Mamon. So the Rashba and the Tosus Arush want to answer the following. That the reason why the Brisa is looking for an Azhara high and low is not because an Onish Momo needs an Azhara. An Onish Momo doesn't need an Azhara. But the question is how to interpret this Parsha. Do we interpret the Parsha that when the Torah imposes this Onish Mamon of Chiyuv Onsim, that's only if there was a fulfillment of the second condition, Namely, in addition to the kfirah, there was a shvua sheker. In other words, maybe I should take the parsha as one indivisible whole. And that unit, which ultimately leads to a not only a chiyuv onesh mamon, but a chiyuv onesh of karbon, all that is one unit. And it refers to a fulfillment of all the conditions that are necessary. Namely, kfira plus shvua sheker. How do I know that I can split this parsha into two parts and say that even if all he implemented was a kfira, but he never violated shvua sheker, nevertheless we're going to punish him and slap on him a chiyuv onsim? The answer to that, says the Braisa, is if we can find an azhara where the Torah warned a person against hakhasha, meaning not to be kofar in a plaintiff's claim against you by lying, even without a shvua, if we have such an azhara, that's going to prove to us that we can take this parasha and split it in half. What I mean by split it in half is the following. Again, let's read the pasuk again. It says, v'kichesh ba v'nishbal sheker. How do I read this? Because then the Torah goes on to say that he's going to be punished with veishvus exeish and gazal, and he pays even bones. Do I read it as v'kicheish ba stop, skip v'nishba al sheker for a moment, bracket that, and then fast forward to veishvus exeish and gazal? Then we come back to v'nishba al sheker, and then we read the next part of the parasha where the Torah says he's got to bring a korban asham, right? Chomesh and asham. Do I have a right to split it in that way? You know, we're really, in a sense, juggling words around. We're taking v'kichesh ba, and we're stopping and jumping over to v'nishba al sheker shav gazal. And the Rashba claims that the only way we're allowed to pull that literary shtick is only if we can find an azhara for v'kichesh ba. And that would, in our minds, justify the possibility of an onesh for violating v'kichesh ba. So again, despite the fact that this onesh of v'eishvus exeish shagazal is an onesh moment, and according to the universal rules, it does not require a prior azhara, here, in this particular case, in a very sensitive move, we're going to require that azhara in order to justify the way we want to cut up the psukim and read it in such a way that even for a kfira alone, without a shvua sheker, he will be subject to the punishment of a heshiv esakzela asher goz. So again, Rabbi Osai, as of now, we're rooting for Rav Sheshes, but now we stop rooting for Rav Sheshes. On the contrary, at this point, we start attacking Rav Sheshes. Masiv, Rami, Bar Choma, we have a Mishnah in Shavuos which contradicts Rav Sheshes. What's the subject of this Mishnah? The Mishnah is going to outline a number of cases in which a person is obligated to take a Shavuah. In other words, he's the defendant, and the plaintiff put a claim against him which requires a shvua, for example, Moda B'miksas or Eid Echad. And there are three cases in which a person has forfeited his credibility regarding a shvua. And as a result of the fact that he forfeited his credibility, he cannot take the shvua. What does that mean? So you and I would have said that means that the plaintiff is going to win the case because we have a rule called Mitok She'eno Nishba Yishalim. No, the Mishnah in Masechta Shavuos in the fourth parak establishes a takana, and that takana is called Shekenegdo Nishba V'notel. We're going to impose upon the plaintiff a shvua. We're going to take the shvua from the defendant because he can't take the shvua. He's chashed al shvua, and we're going to superimpose it onto the tovea, onto the plaintiff. Now, what's important for us is that who loses his status as a neman b'shvua, as having the credibility of a shvua? According to Rav Sheshes, if a person was kofer b'pikadon, Rav Sheshes establishes that the kfira alone makes him into a Gazlan. If he's a Gazlan, he can't be trusted on a Shavuah. The Mishnah, in a very oblique sort of way, omits the case of Kofer Bikadon and requires, in order to set up the mechanism of Shekenegdo Nishba, requires that the defendant, the Nitba, took a Shvua Sheker, and that establishes him as a Choshed al Shvua and activates the principle of Shekenegdo. Let's read the Braisa. The Braisa, the Mishnah itself says, Shekenegdo Choshed al Shvua. Ketzad, what would be a situation in which the Tovea would take the Shvua instead of the Nishba, the Nitba, because the Nitba is Choshed al Shvua? Number one, Echad Shvuas Edus, if he took a Shvuas Edus and he perjured himself, the Echad Shvuas HaPikadon, or he took a Shvua on a Pikadon and he turned out to be to have lied in that Shvua, even a Shvua Shav, a person took a Shvua, Rashi gives an example, he took a Shvua about a certain stone and he said it's gold, it's made of gold, and it's not made of gold, so nobody loses any money by that right now, but he violates a Bein Adam LaMakom in terms of a Shvua Shav. In all these three cases, since he lied with a Shvua, he has forfeited his credibility and the emunus of a shvua, and therefore kenegdo nishpa v'notavim isah. But if I accept the principle of Rav Sheshes that a kofer b'pikadon is considered a gazlan even though he didn't take a shvua, why did the Mishnah omit this case? Why did the Mishnah insist that we have three scenarios in which a person violated the truth of his oath? Why not forget about the oath? Leave out the Shvua Sheker. Is Bekfiro who the Ifsalei, even if he hadn't taken the oath? For example, the second case on the list in this Mishnah is Shvua HaPikadon, which means he took a Shvua, a false Shvua, Shvua Sheker, on a Pikadon. Forget about the Shvua. The Kfira itself should engender his status as a Gazlan, and therefore disqualify his Shvua and activate the principle of Shekenegdo Nishba Vinotel. So Rabbo said, we see here clearly that when Rav Sheshes, the way the Gemara understood Rav Sheshes, HaKofer B'Pikadon, Nasa Olav Gazlan, it's not just Chayav Ba'onsim, as Rav Sheshes said it explicitly, but it means that all the repercussions and all the dinim that apply to a Gazlan will apply to this Kofer B'Pikadon. So for example, I asked you, what would be the din if this Kofer B'Pikadon subsequently, before the Edom came in to prove that he was lying in this Kfira, he testified, or they testified in another case. We would only find out now, retroactively, that that testimony was given by a Gazlan, and therefore it's disqualified. There are many, many repercussions to the law of a Gazlan, one of which is that he's Choshed al Shvua. So why was that omitted from the Mishnah? Why did the Mishnah insist that he took a Shvua Sheker? Amri, the Gemara, wants to suggest, you know what? There is a way of defending Rav Sheshes. Now, by way of introduction, I want to say the following. I think the Gemara is pushing a little bit hard here. You know, it's like a little bit of a needle an elephant in the eye of a needle here. But for our purposes, what's more important is that the Gemara is reinterpreting Rav Sheshes. There's a whole new understanding of Rav Sheshes. In other words, the Gemara is going to say now that this Mishnah is talking about a very specific set of circumstances, a very fluky kind of case. But I'm not so interested in the case. I'm more interested in the concept. There's a case and there's a concept. They both start with a C, right? Case and concept. What's the case? And then we'll get to the concept. Amri, the yeshiva, answered, Hacha b'mayas kina, you know what the Mishnah is talking about? A very strange case. Dekoy b'agam, it means that the animal, which is actually in the possession of the defendant, you know, of the shomer, and the shomer did receive this cow, and it was deposited in, you know, for his supervision in his hands. But what happened at the time that he denied having the cow, and then took a shvua? The animal was not literally in his possession. It was out there in the agam. It was out there in the grazing area near the waterways, you know, near the canal, you know, out in the canal. Do you know what I'm talking about? The canal? That's where they had grazing areas. Right. So the animal was no longer at that particular moment in the... Again, it's a little bit difficult to say that that's what the Mishnah is referring to. But what I'm more interested in is, the Gemara is telling us that even Rav Sheshis would agree that when he said that Akofer Pikadon is Hareze Gazlan V'chai Ba'onsim, it wasn't a blanket statement. Mm-hmm. No. It's only in a case where the Shomer, who is Kofer B'Pikadon, has the Pikadon, if I can use this term, Tachas Yado. But if it's not Tachas Yado, and we have to rack our brains and figure out why, if it's out there in the Agam, again, the Kfira is still a, you know, a rotten kfira, so to speak. He's lying. The shvuah is a rotten shvuah and everything else. Well, actually, we're talking about Rav Sheshis. There was no shvuah, so leave out shvuah. Now, what difference does it make if it's in his possession in the literal sense? You know, he's got it locked up in his corral, or if it's out there in the agam?
He's technically not lying.
Why isn't he lying? So to appreciate this, we have to start a different mesechta, and that's called Bava Metzia. And what the beginning of Bava Metzia is famous for is something called Ishtamuti Kamishtamit. The Gemara operates with a certain, what word can I use? A certain justification. And that's too heavy of a word, but a psychological analysis of why a person lies. And in the most extreme, harsh case, a person is a no good liar. You know, he's just a thief, and that's why he lies, because he doesn't want to give up something that he wants to possess for himself, even though he knows full well it's not his. But then there's a case called Ishtamuti Kamishtamit, which I would call, for lack of a better term, a delay tactic. This guy has no intention of being an outright thief. The problem is that he needs a little bit of time. Let's say, for example, if Reuven lends 1,000 to Shimon, comes time for payment, and lo and behold, Shimon doesn't have the money. So Shimon, if he's an honest guy, will say, I owe you the 1,000, I don't have the money, let's see if we can work out some sort of a compromise. Although these days, I don't know, compromises are a little bit out of style, I don't know why. Anyway,
you know,
I in any newspaper of any day, I don't know, for some reason, compromise that. But theoretically, if I would tell you that Shimon admits that he owes the money, he doesn't have the money to pay, we would work this out somehow. You know, give him another month or something, whatever it might be. But instead, even though he had that option of being honest, he was dishonest, but he's not a thief. See, that's what the Gemara creates, this gray area. Mm-hmm. Usually we think it's either black or it's white. Either the guy's a no-good thief or he's telling the truth. The Gemara creates this ambivalent middle category of ishtamute kamishtamit, which means hu mishtamet mimenu in modern Hebrew, which means he's delaying, he's avoiding him. You know, right now I don't have any money, I never took any money from you, but what he's saying in his mind is just get this guy off my back because I need a little bit of time to gather together the funds. The nafkamina is going to be whether we call him an outright gossip. Do we falsify, do we now what's the word I want to use? Do we usurp him of his credibility? If he's an outright thief, he has forfeited his credibility. We can't trust his shvuah. He's a gazlan, and the whole, you know, we throw the books at him. If he was telling the truth, then obviously he's telling the truth. We're not talking about that case because the Adam came and told us that he was lying. But he wasn't an outright thief. He was in that middle category called ishtamuti kamishtami. Rabbah, at the beginning of Masechta Bava Metzia, establishes that the whole reason why the Torah created a shvuah, for example, the case of Moda B'Mikzas, right? Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me 1,000. Shimon says, I owe you 500, not 1,000. No, so what's the shvuah? The shvuah is predicated on the fact that Shimon is a no-good liar. If he's a no-good liar, and he really owes Reuven the full 1,000, then he's a thief on the other 500. How can the Torah say, let him take a shvuah? His shvuah is meaningless. He has forfeited his credibility in a shvuah. The answer is, ishtamuti kamishtamit. He really knows full well that he's going to pay back the other 500. He has no intention to be a thief and steal his friend's 500. His friend did him a great tova. His friend lent him money, whatever the case might be. He's going to come up with the other 500. The problem is he doesn't have the liquid assets. So in his mind, he justifies it with coming up with this, you know, distraction tactic. And he says, I only owe you 500. Rips out $500 and he pays him. The other 500 he can't come up. So he says, I deny. He's not an outright thief. And therefore the Torah says, you know what's going to motivate him to be honest about it? It's the shmur. That far he wouldn't go. Mm-hmm. With all his psychological justifications and all his tactics to delay payment and wait till he gets the funds, the liquid assets, he's not going to perjure himself with an oath. The Mishnah says in Masechta Shavuos that it's not coincidental that a false oath is one of the 10 commandments that we'll read this parsha, this Shabbos. The Gemara tells the Masechta Shavuos that the earth shook when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Lo tishav v'shmi b'shaker, arba meos parsa, arba meos parsa. The Torah says that even though normally an avera will not be transferred over to the children and the grandchildren here, it's, you know, a shileshim, ad ribeim, you know, it's going to be, God will exact punishment. Shvua sheker is a terrible thing. And therefore a person will not take the shvua sheker. That is the svar of ishtamutik of ishtamit, that otherwise the entire parasha of shvua. Without it, we don't understand shvua. Because a shvua is a self-contradiction. You're telling me you believe he's a thief and therefore you tell him to take a shvua. What good is a shvua if he's a thief? The answer is he's that middle of the road thief. He's the ambivalent thief. That's called ishtamuti kamishtam. Now the Gemara takes that svar and applies it to omenes ba'agav. This is a bit of a stretch, but let's at least understand the concept of the Gemara. The Gemara says that when Rav Sheshes tells us that when a man, you know, says to his the plaintiff, he says, I never took the cow from you. The whole story is just a gebluffte story. It's an imagination, it's a fabrication. He's a gazlan. He's pasul shvua. He's got to pay for onsim. That's only the outright thief. The man has the cow in his backyard, in his corral, and instead of opening it and giving back Elsie the cow to its proper owner, instead he denies that I never got your cow. What justification could he have for such a thing? He's got the cow under his nose. But in a case where the cow is out there in the agam, again, I don't know how long it'll take him to fetch the cow, thus basically, I can't help you with that. Is it going to take him 5 minutes? Is it going to take him an hour? I don't know. But in the meantime, he needs a stall tactic. So what does he say? He says, I didn't take your cow. But meanwhile, the cow is in the agam. He had full intention to ultimately return the cow. That's called ishtamuti kamishtamin. In that set of circumstances, even Rav Sheshes admits that he's not a gazlan. And we can trust him with the shvu. That's the Gemara's answer here. Hacha b'mayaskinon bi'agam. Why is this Mishnah and Shvuas insist that he took a shvuas sheker? And then and only then does he forfeit his credibility in shvua. And then there's kenegdo nishba menotel. That's because he was faced with a situation where the cow was not accessible. It was koy be'agam lav kfirahu. Why not the savar? He justifies in his mind the shomer ishtamitna le adi azilna umaisina le. Let me push him off until such time as I can get access to the cow and return it to him. He doesn't have what's called kavana legzela. He doesn't have a deliberate, you know, absolutely guilty intention of stealing, and therefore even Rav Sheshes would agree that we can trust him on a shvua. However, Rav Sheshes was referring to a case where the gzela is tachas yodo, and in such a case, when he denies it, he becomes a gazlan. Of course, we're not totally out in the clear over here, because the Rishonim are going to ask in the Mishnah only lists cases where he took a shvua. According to Rav Sheshes, there is a case where he's posel a shvua and kenegdo nishba v'notel, despite the fact that he did not take a shvua, namely in the case of lokoi v'agam, where instead it's tachas yodo. And if he received a pikadon, and he denies that he received a pikadon, and at that moment of denial, he has the pikadon in his hands. In such a case, Rav Sheshet says we can't trust him on a shvuah because he's a full-fledged deliberate gazlan, and the kfira makes him into a gazlan. In such a case, enochinami, we would need a kenegdo nishpa v'notel in order to passel, in order to allow the plaintiff to collect the cow. And that's because in the past, in a different set of circumstances, he was kofer b'pikadon, and the pikadon was tachas yod. There was no ishtamute, and there was no delay tactic.
Really?
Just one second. I just don't want to forget one thing.
Okay,
and then the floor is yours. I'd like to suggest perhaps a more conceptual approach to this distinction between tachas yodo and lo tachas yodo. And I say this by way of an introduction to the sugya of Rav Idi Bar Ovin, which is going to be the next sugya immediately following. Perhaps the issue of ishtamuti kamishtamet and lo amrino nishtamuti kamishtamet can be formulated in a different way. Let's leave out the psychology here for a moment. Perhaps we could say the following. There are two types of kfiras. One kfira is on what I call a chov. The other kfira is on what I call a be'en. What do I mean? If the object is here, right now, in front of Shimon, the defendant, and Shimon denies that he has it, that's a kfira on a be'en, on a physical object. That's when Rav Sheshet says, since he's got a cow in his possession and it doesn't belong to him, and he refuses to acknowledge that it doesn't belong to him, and he claims it for his own, that tfisa, that grabbing onto the cow, is gzela. The kfira is only a method by which he is telling us, he's declaring in so many words, that this cow is mine and I'm not giving it up. That makes him into a gazlan on this specific chefetz, which is be'en. Once the cow is out there in the grazing lands, then it becomes a chov. He becomes responsible in one of two ways, either to retrieve the cow and return it to its own, or to pay its value. That already becomes a chov. In a case of a chov, Rav Sheshet would agree that he's not a gazlan. Gzela has to relate to a be'en. The Gemara couches it in terms of ishtamuti kamishtamet or lo amrinan ishtamuti kamishtamet. But the truth is, it's hainu hach. Because when do we say ishtamuti kamishtamet? That's on a chov. A chov can be pushed off, again, in the minds of the person, and he's not a gazlan. You can't have gzela on a chov. A chov is not something you can steal. That chov will continue to exist even well beyond the kfira. Masha Enkein, with regard to a be'en, there's something called gzela. And gzela means that the gazlan is kone, the object in gzela. But for that, we require not a chov, but a be'en. Is anybody following me at all? Or am I just talking to myself? You're looking at me like I'm, from Mars. I don't know. Okay? So what I'm suggesting is...
a new concept.
Yeah, I'm introducing a new concept here. What I'm saying is that Gzela relates to A, but not to B. A is a be'en. I can steal this table, Chas V'Shalom, of course it's a physical table, but I can't steal a chov. A chov is abstract. It doesn't exist in this world. So what's pshat Gzela on a chov? And the Gemara assumes that that's going to determine whether we say Ishtamuti Kamishtamet or we don't say Ishtamuti Kamishtamet. He's not a gazlan on a chov, and that's called Ishtamuti Kamishtamet. Maybe now he's not paying back the chov because he's denying it, but ultimately down the line he will pay back the chov. And we'll catch him and we'll force him to pay back the chov. But gzela is related to one frame of time, one moment in which he steals a be'en, an actual tangible object. That's called lo ishtamuti kamishtamet. You can't tell me he's stealing an object, but he's justifying it. As he's holding on to the object, he's saying, later on I'm going to give it back to you. That we don't say. And I say that, if you give me one more minute, Alan, I know you have a question to ask, but look at the next line of the Gemara, Teda. The Gemara wants to prove that Rav Sheshes would accept this distinction based on another statement, the Omar of Idi Bar Ovin, and now he's talking about a borrower, a lover, Hakofer Bemilveh, and he denies that he didn't borrow any money from the Malva, despite the Malva and the plaintiff's claim against him. Then we find out that he's lying. Kosher Liedus. Rav Idi says he has not forfeited his status as a kosher aid, meaning he's not a gazlan. However, and here we turn to Daf Kufav Amin Aleph, Bipikadon, if he denies a pikadon, in other words, the witnesses now say, look, you denied this cow which is in your house, and you really took that cow or received that cow from the mafkid, from its proper owner, then posuliedus. He is posuliedus, he is a gazlon. Why is it that in the first case, Rav Idi Bar Ovin says, Kofer Milva Koshleidus, he's not a gazlon, and yet in the second case, Kofer Pikadon, he is a gazlon? And I personally would suggest the following. I think I'm right. I'm not sure if I'm right. That the difference between Kofer Vemilva and Kofer Pikadon is that whereas in Milva there's no Be'en, he's just lying about a Chov, and therefore there's no such thing as Gzelon a Chov. And if you want to couch it in terms of the Gemara of Ishtamutik of Ishtamit, you know what? He's not paying the Chov now, but ultimately he will pay the Chov. However, in the case of Pikadon, there he can be considered a Gazon on a Be'en. There's a physical object. And if he's claiming it for his own, when he knows full well that it belongs to the mafkid, to someone else, he is a gazlan, in effect, on this very physical, real, tangible object. And therefore, as a gazlan, he's posuliyed. Yes. That's what I wanted to suggest.
Alex? Actually, I was going to talk on the exact same Indian, but I would, maybe it's the same thing I'm saying. It seems to me the difference is, it doesn't make sense if the object is ba'an, to say ishtamuti kamishkami.
Right.
Why doesn't he just say I'm a gazlan v'hari shel chalafana?
Correct. Hari shel chalafana. Come and take it.
It's in the agam.
Okay. So I don't know about the agam. Okay. So you're right. It's a little bit strange, but the Gemara says, and again to quote the language of the Gemara, ada zilna maisinole. Yeah. Maybe it'll take him a month to get it back from the agam.
But why does he have to get it back? He doesn't at all. We learned earlier about when a gazlan steals a coin and throws it into the yam.
Again, we're not talking about a gazlan now, Alan. We're talking about a shomer. A shomer is chayv and ashava.
Oh, no, no, I'm...
A, a shomer cannot say, well, your cow is somewhere out there in the grazing area. You know, he's a shomer, he's not a gazlan. That's the whole point of the sugya.
Oh, I'm maybe, sorry. Maybe, then that's my mistake, because I thought we were talking about a gazlan.
Now, Rav Osai, I have to tell you, I need a lot of help. I need a lot of help over here. There's a Tana by the name of Ilfa. I don't need any help with that, but
that's helpful. Yeah. That is helpful.
First of all, I want to tell you that Ilfa is a Tana. Rav Sheshes needs a lot of help, because Ilfa says the exact opposite of Rav Sheshes. I need help because the Gemara is going to try to reconcile Ilfa with Rav Sheshes, and it's going to introduce a brand new concept which is very difficult to understand. So first, let's see, why does Gemara believe that Ilfa contradicts Rav Sheshes? Omar Ilfa. Ilfa says two words. That's all that came out of the mouth of Ilfa. But these two words are very heavy. They're very laden with meaning. Shvua Kona. Which means that if a person denies a claim and he substantiates his denial with a shvua, he becomes a gazlan. And a gazlan is Kona the object. Says the Gemara, Shvua he dekanyo. Ilfa puts all the emphasis here, he pinpoints the shvua. That's what generates the status of a gazlan on the chayfetz, because he took a shvua. He was obligated to take the shvua, he took the shvua, now he proved that he was lying. He has a din of a gazlan by virtue of that shvua. But kfir abel kfir lo kanya. From the fact that Ilfa put all the emphasis here, pointing out the shvua, he implies that a kfira alone without substantiation with a shvua would not make him into a gazlan. So the Gemara says, well, I got my answer pat, you know, it's in my back pocket. I've already given that answer, I might as well pull it out again. namely Hochanami the Kaima Biagam. Why is it that Ilfa needs the Shvua in order to make him into a Gazlan and to be Mechayev him as a kid for Kinyonik Zeil for Onsim? That's because it was Biagam. And if it was Biagam, if he only had the Kfira, then at the level of Kfira, I could say to myself, you know, this guy would never perjure himself with the Shvua Sheker. That far he wouldn't go. It's only a case of Ishtamute Kamishtamit. He knows it's going to take him a while and a hassle to find and locate the animal and haul it in and give it back to the mafkid and so forth and so on. Therefore, he's not Kona, the object, as a gazlan. He's not an outright, deliberate liar and thief. Only if he went a step further and he took the shvu. Up until this point, I'm okay. Now, here's where I need your help. The Eboy Seymour. The Gemara now reinterprets Ilfa in a way that even Rav Sheshes would agree with Ilfa, and we could reconcile the two. My Shvua Kona, we thought that the words Shvua Kona that came out of the mouth of Ilfa meant that when the Shomer is Kofer and then he takes a Shvua and then he's Kona as a Gazlan, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about a whole new Halach. Rabosa, you're not going to believe this. A man could be kona something with a shvua. I know of a lot of different kinyonim. I can give you a list of probably, with off the top of my head, about 7 or 8 different kinyonim. Some work in metaltalin, some work in karka, some in both. But I never heard of a kinyon shvua that a person could be kona something with an oath. Iboy Seima Kidder Rav Huna. What Ilfa had in mind was the statement of Rav Huna, the Amar Rav Huna Marav. It all traces back to Rav. Manali biyadcha. The Reuven, the plaintiff, says to Shimon, "You owe me a mana." Vahalo Omer and Shimon, the defendant, says, "Ein lecha biyadi. I didn't borrow a mana. I never did. I don't owe you a red cent." Vinishba. And now Shimon substantiates his counterclaim and his denial with a Shvua Sheker. Vakak Bo Eden. Potu. Rabosai. If your eyes don't bulge out of you, don't jump out of you, it's my body. Potu. Ribbonishlam. The Shomer is holding on to $100 that he received as $1,000, $1,000,000. He doesn't owe him a red cent. Is there any question that he's holding on to $1,000, $1,000,000? No question about it. The Adam testified to that effect. He doesn't have to pay. He owns the $1,000. He made an acquisition on the $1,000. With what? With a shvua. Mind blowing. So in the back of the Masifta, there's something called Yalkut Biurim. And it's really meant for Talmidei Chachamim who are learning something be'iyun gadol, not once or twice a week for an hour, no offense, but, you know, really dedicating their lives to it. And he quotes someone who tries to make some sense out of this halach of Rav. And he says the following. Al yidei ha-shvua Nifkas Bailus Habailim Alapikodon Mishum Shebishvua Nifsak. What does the word Nifsak mean? Miloshin Paskin. What does Paskin mean in English? A verdict, right? A verdict was handed down. Mm-hmm. Now, watch what goes on over here. Reuven is Tovea Shimon. Shimon denies the claim, and then he has to take a Shvua. He takes the Shvua Nifsak. Nifsak means that's it. Finito. Case closed. Once the case is closed, HaTorah lo rotzasol la'arer es ha'mishpat. I think, Rabosai, don't laugh at me, because I don't know beans about law, but I think it's called double jeopardy. Did you ever hear of such a thing? There's a fancy word for it in Latin, but don't ask me, because I don't know a word of Latin. And, you see, as you know, the courts can't keep open a case endlessly. You know, you imagine there's a legal case, and you know, 50 years from now, somebody's going to come up and testify, you know, I have something to testify about the case that you handed down a verdict 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So now, I don't know exactly at what point, you know, the gravel goes down and the case is closed, finito, you know, curtains, and we're no longer going to introduce and accept any evidence on the case. I don't know. But in halachic terms, and halacha came way before the law, and that is the shvua, is the closure. And that's what he says, mm-hmm. that kfar nifsak, it already was paskin based on the law, based on the shvua, that achefetz hu shalo, mm-hmm. meaning we trust in it, but with his shvua at this point. The Edom didn't come into Bezdin yet. Mm-hmm. And therefore we issue a psak to the effect of it's his. V'atorah lo rotzeso la'arer es ha-mishpat. Chazon Ish. Now, Rabosai, the Chazon Ish lived in our generation. Probably most of us in this room overlap with the Chazon Ish. He's not gone for a century. The Gemara was written about 1600 or 1700 years ago. I don't know exactly. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. But a long time ago. It took 1500 years until somebody, namely the Chazon Ish, took a stab at trying to understand how this halacha works. Let me dramatize the problem, and you tell me if you buy into the Chazon Ish's solution of the problem. A man takes a shvua. He finishes the shvua, and two witnesses come into Bezdin to testify, the Torah believes two witnesses, that he perjured himself in the shvua. He is holding on to Reuven the Tovea's cow. The cow belongs to Shimon. Again, a cow is worth 500. But imagine a court case on $50 billion. He took a shvua, and that's it. Case is closed. Says the Chazon Ish, Kfar nifsak hadin, v'amomenu shalom, v'ein ha-Torah rotze, la'araris hadin. Again, if you tell me the Edom came in 50 years later, they came in 10 years later, they came a year later, maybe even a week later, a month later, I don't know when, fine, I don't know. Torah even Limon Eitzarech, if that's the Xeris HaKosef, I got accepted. Who am I, little Berzon, to question this din? But what if the Eden came in immediately on the footsteps of his Shvuah? It's done, too late. The Shvuah was taken, case is closed, throw it out of court. It's unbelievable. Hashvua mafkia es hachiyuv v'ukfar hachefetz u'shalom v'ipoka abaylus shel abaylus. It's a pretty shocking halacha, Rabbi. So when I learned this, I said to myself, I don't know beans about the Torah. I used to think I knew something about the Torah until I learned this sugya. And then I see how little I know. If you would have woken me up in the middle of the night and told me this sugya, I would have told you you're an outright liar. You deserve to be posel shvua for saying such a thing. But as I state, and the Gemara tells me that this is derived from a pasuk, Shen Nemar, the parsha is in Shmos Chav Beis. There it talks about a shomer who's chayv a shvua. You know that every shomer who doesn't return the abshik has to take a shvua. It says shvua Hashem tia ben shneim. Right, and he has to take a shvua that he wasn't sholeh yad b'pikadon, that he doesn't have the shvua in his rishus. And then it says, v'lokach ba'alov v'lo yishalim. What do those four words mean? They, like, you know, again, I don't know what, you know, if the, in the English translation, I don't know what they offer you, but it's a very ambiguous phrase. V'lokach ba'alov v'lo yishalim. Now, what's v'lokach ba'alov? Does v'lokach ba'alov mean that the ba'al gets it back? V'lokach ba'alov? That doesn't seem to make any sense, because the Torah says in the previous part of the sentence that he took the shvua. So why v'lokach ba'alov?
No.
And then it says v'lo yishalim, that he doesn't have to pay. So what's v'lokach ba'alov? Zot Rav says the only way of interpreting those two words v'lokach ba'alov is kevan shekiblu habaylim. What did they take or what did they receive? Shvua. They receive the shvua, the shomer. It's almost as if they pick up the shvua and they take it home. Why? Because Reuven was tovea Shimon, and he says, "Where's my pikon?" Shvua denies. Shimon denies. It takes a shvua. That shvua is given from Shimon over to Reuven. Reuven got his shvua. Once Reuven got his shvua, v'lokach ba'alov. Then we read this next two words in the pasuk: "Velo yishalim shuv eino mishalim mama." He gave him a shvua, shalom al Yisrael, finito, the case is closed, he took a shvua sheker. By the way, if you ever wanted to motivate a person to take a false oath, this is a good way of motivating him. You can gain the biggest scandal in the world and take the shvua sheker, and it's yours. Again, you'll still have to suffer a lot of repercussions here. You know, you're not all free. We're not going to trust you ultimately, you know, down the line for edus or shvua. We know you're a no good, perjurer. But as far as the $1 million is concerned, it's a good way of making a buck.
If you take the false oath, then you're not too worried about that.
What?
If you take the false oath, you're not too worried about it.
Yeah, too worried about it. But you know what I was thinking, Michael? You know, this is a great ploy. You know, we have people in America, I suppose all over the world, who were involved in all sorts of scandals. And you know, it was very difficult for them to make that money. They're sitting in jail now. But you know, when you think about it, they, you know, you feel a sense of compassion for them because they really had, they used their brains. You know, it was very ingenious. Well, yeah. I have a much easier way of making big bucks. All I have to do is get friendly with a billionaire, ask him for a $1 billion loan. Okay, that's not going to be easy. Okay, I have to do it. But you know, maybe a loan of $100,000 is gan shayach. You know, we daven in shul together. You know, when he has yard side and I have yard side the same day, I give him the cover to daven for the almond. He owes me one. So I come over and say, Reb Yid, do you mind lending me $100,000? That's a significant sum of money. But you know what? We have an ongoing relationship. You know, we're both members of the same congregation. And I think I'll give you $100,000. I got a good way of making that money. Because tomorrow he's going to ask me for the money back. I'm going to take a shvur sheker and go, Manu, I was kind of a shvur. I would. But I'm just saying, the same guy who's dreaming up all those scandals, and I know of a major Torah University institution that is suffering to this day, I don't know how many years since the scandal, and is still financially, you know, on the outs because of the money they lost. And that's just one institution, you know, multiply that by all the victims, right, of this thing. And the guy created some sort of poof. I don't know how he did it, but he convinced people that they're making big bucks from a scam of some sort. Whether they call it Ponzi or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? And I honestly, I read this thing. I said, wow, a Ponzi scam. That's pretty sharp. How do you do such a thing? You know, I never even heard of a Ponzi scam. I didn't know it existed. But why not a shvua scam? You know what I'm saying? For this same no good bum who's ripping people off and caused them such terrible, I mean, I don't have to tell you, such terrible suffering. That same guy could have just taken it one false oath. Big deal, one false oath. You know, that's terrible.
We've learned from us in the past. You know, well, we know that someone is prepared to lose money rather than to give a false shvua.
You know, but if the stakes were high,
very strongly along those lines, and all of a sudden, we're going completely the other way.
You know, some people are very religious and very meticulous, very pious. I see that in the Fry family, they're very straight. You know, they can't even imagine, you know, that how could it be that anyone would take a false oath? But I'm telling you, if the money was big, you know what I mean? Yes. But I Rabosa, I'm just trying to be dramatic about it. But really, the bottom line I'm trying to tell you is that I find this Gemara very, very difficult. I'm not sure if without your help, I'm going to be any brighter on Wednesday when we get back. Today's Monday? What is today? Today is Tuesday? On Thursday. Sorry, I get confused. On Thursday, I don't think I'm going to necessarily have a ray of hope because all I see here is the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was having trouble with this Gemara. So we're good company. Okay, Rabosa, we'll stop here. We'll doubt me.
It can't be that, you know, such a thing kind of
I don't know. I will look in Shulchan Aruch, and I'm going to show you that it's
Paskin that way, or just Rav. I have an explanation for it.
Yeah, it could be La Halacha. Maybe we don't accept Rav. You know, that's what you're pointing out, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if we accept Rav. That we have to learn in the next sugya when we accept Rav. But still, Rav. You know, Rav. And if we don't accept Rav, we have to reinterpret the pasuk because Rav derives it from a pasuk.
Yeah, ready.
And we're going to soon see that even after the Gemara reinterprets this pasuk, the Gemara still assumes that in the case of halva, if he took the shvua sheker, he doesn't have to pay the halva.
I mean, I think
so
it all
we're not
dates,
out in the clear here.
I think it all dates back to one important factor. You offered him the Shavua. He did not say, it's not that he denies
well,
it.
Well, no, says that, what do you mean he offered him? Beis Din imposes the Shavua. If he took the Shavua on his own,
The Beis Din imposes a Shavua upon him.
Right.
They are saying that this Shavua is testifying to the MS right. thing.
Now, but can't they admit the truth that
no,
it didn't work?
No, because...
You know, there's a whole sugya called Beis Din Shita.
Yeah.
And Beis Din Shita means where they made a mistake. Here, I wouldn't even call it a Beis Din Shita.
There's not a mistake.
Two Adam came in.
You have to say the Torah made a mistake. It didn't make
a
mistake.
Okay.
The fact is when you accept the Shmua,
that's just, you know...
That means you're